Welcome to Hot Flashes and Cool Topics podcast, the voice for women in midlife and beyond. At Hot Flashes and Cool Topics, we talk about anything and everything to do with midlife. My name is Colleen.
My name is Bridget.
Well, ladies, you are in for a treat today because we have the incomparable Carla Hall on the show. She is going to be talking about her new show, Chasing Flavor, and turning 60, which she does in May, and she is absolutely excited to do it. She's turning her sex day on, and we are here for it. It was a great conversation. We love her. She honestly just brings a smile the minute the conversation starts. You have to smile when you're around her.
Yeah. I mean, she's so much fun. She's funny. She addresses, you know, things in this time of life for us. And the way she does it is just fun. And this Chasing Flavor is really interesting. And I think I say in the podcast, it addresses two of my favorite things, history and food. So it really, for me, I found it so fascinating. It's like time travel with food and where it comes from and getting, you know, all the way back. So I really, you got to watch it. It's on Max, HBO Max.
Really, it's six great episodes, easy to binge.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She travels. Actually, I didn't know she was traveling during the pandemic when she was filming this.
I wonder, because there, you know, you definitely see masks in some of the episodes. And yeah, there were places that she really wanted to go, she didn't get to go to. So we have to have a second season. If you're the powers that be that are listening at Max, we need to have another season because we need to see where else Carla is chasing flavor.
She tracks the lineage of things like chicken pot pie, of ice cream. It's just a really fun show to watch. And if you love travel, you're going to love the sights and all the stuff she's doing. And we also talked about her turning 60 in May, and she's thrilled. She really tries to bring in each decade with energy and vitality, and she's healthy. And she is, obviously we talked menopause because we always talk menopause with Carla because she's just so funny. But we touched on brain health more on this one because she has one of the markers like Bridget does for late onset, onset Alzheimer's. So she talks about what she's doing to keep her brain health and the fact that she's kind of in that sandwich generation where she's helping her mom. Her mom recently moved in closer to her so that she was able to just have a little closer watch over her mom. And I think that is the same for a lot of us. We're going to let Carla talk because it was such a fun episode. We don't really need to tell you anything else. You can just listen to it.
Listen, and because you're going to find out there. Yeah.
And we'll talk to you after. Welcome back to Hot Flashes and Cool Topics. Today on the podcast, we have one of our favorite humans on the planet, Carla Hall. Welcome back to the show.
It is so great to be here. Did you hear the exhalation?
Right.
I feel like you all are a warm hug.
Oh,
you get me.
You.
You're my tribe. I love being here.
Well, thank you. Well, you've been busy, you know, after watching your new show. You've been all around. So,
well, let's talk about that first. You have a new show on HBO. It's called Chasing Flavor, and it's really unique. It's six episodes of 30 minutes, but you actually kind of trace the heritage of food from a different perspective. Can you talk about how it came to be and why you wanted to be a part of it?
So it came to be, it started as a conversation that I was talking to someone at a dinner party. And I said, you know, when I meet people, and I'm in a lot of cars where they're drivers, and if someone's from somewhere else, and even if they're from the States, I'll say, you know, instead of asking, how are you? I would say, you know, what's a dish that you miss from home? And I just watch how their faces change and how they become very engaged in the question. You know, it's not like a yes, no thing. And so I was telling that story at a dinner party, and my literary agent's husband, you know, he was like, wow, that's kind of cool. And he goes and tells someone who was the president of a production company. 2 weeks later, I get a call and said, hey, want to come in and talk to us? And I was like, oh, okay. You know, and then 6 weeks later, we're shooting a pilot, and then like a sizzle. And then a year later, we're actually shooting the show. And yeah, it was crazy. But interestingly enough, when I was talking to someone who worked with me on The Chew, they said, Carla, you had mentioned doing something like this 10 years ago. So it's funny how you forget, like you put something out into the world, you forget about it, and then there it is.
And it just pops back in. And, you know, watching it, it's like you're doing time travel with food.
Yes.
And it really was so interesting just learning this history, because I am a big history buff. So that whole part of it, really, my two favorite things, history and food, you know, coming together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So can you tell us that about, just or share a little bit like what it's like? You don't have to give away the whole episode, but how you start out and how the traveling goes.
So we start out with these beloved American dishes, and we end up tracing it back. So you go to one place and you talk about it, and then you get a kernel of history, and you're like, well, wait, let me go to that place. And then you go there, you get more of the stories. Like, oh, wait a minute, let me go to this place. And the thing is, it's not the definitive path of food, because when you look at food, it's like a tree. So do you go down this branch or that branch? Do you go out on this leaf or that leaf? You know, so you make choices. And there were so many surprises. And I just think that there's so much of our culture wrapped up in the story of food that we forget, and we focus on the dish itself. But what we're trying to remind people and make people curious is that if you don't know the story, you really don't know the dish. So by taking a dish like 3,000 years ago, you're like, oh, wait a minute, what? You know, it becomes really kind of fun and exciting.
So can we, let's start an example like your chicken pot pie.
Mm-hmm.
How would you even begin to trace the history of that?
So we look for dishes that have deep roots. And so when you look at chicken pot pie, many times they go back to England, so the pasty. Right. And when you look at those ingredients, and also you're looking at different cultures and different culinary historians who have a different perspective on the dish as well. So you're trying to make sense of everyone's stories that you are putting together. And we have a lot of producers who were, you know, researching and doing all these things. By the way, I chose chicken pot pie because it runs parallel to my culinary career. So I had to do chicken pot pie. And so when you look at where the British went, so they came to the States, obviously, but they also went to Jamaica. So then you're looking at the pasty and you're like, wait a minute, what does that have to do with our chicken pot pie? But it's all of the other cultures who were there. But think about who was in the States versus who was in Jamaica. And so that's how food travels. So food and culture is like a butterfly effect for one thing, you know, and then you could actually, we haven't done the show yet. If we get another season, you could go to Jamaica and then spin off and go and trace curry back to India.
Yeah. That was what, one thing I learned so much about this show was how much, and you bring it up quite a bit, erasure there is in this. And that was just completely fascinating. Just, you know, of course we know that, but to really get to hear these people's names, and one of them was James Hemming. And can you share a little bit about him because of the White House connection and everything like that?
Yeah. So James Hemmings was the, I mean, I guess we say chef of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemmings' brother. And he was actually trained in France. So you've been hearing a lot about James in the last decade or so. I mean, there's a foundation who is talking a lot about James. And so James was responsible for bringing back and continuing the making of ice cream in the White House. And much years later, you have Augustus Jackson. So if James Hemmings brought ice cream here, it was Augustus Jackson, who was also an enslaved chef at the White House, who was there for 20 years, moved to Philly, and was the father of ice cream, who created the idea of how ice cream was made. But he wasn't given the credit. And then that credit goes to a white woman. And so, and it's interesting because even in telling this story, people say, oh, he didn't patent his invention. I mean, what black man at that time, you know, before slavery ended, you know, in the 1860s, what black person was making a patent on something, right? So that was also very important in terms of the voices and the culinary historians who are telling the stories. Because if you own the, if you own the publishers and the books and the media, that's going to be the perspective of your history. And so you dig and try to get to another perspective and what was actually the truth of how there are more people adding to this experience than what is actually taught in school.
It was really interesting. How did you choose six dishes? Because, like, how do you narrow that down?
Well, it's a committee. There's a network. There's a lot of discussion. We had so many other things that we wanted to do, but also keeping in mind, this was shot during the pandemic. So we shot it at the end of 2020 on into, I think, the end of January 2021. So that's when we were shooting. There were certain places we couldn't go. So for barbecue, we really wanted to go to Korea because the Korean barbecue is so well known. But the quarantine restraints prevented us from going there. So a lot of it was time and place and where we could go and get in and get out. But also it was these deep stories that we wanted to tell. Like I wanted to do pancakes because I think pancakes are something that you can have wherever. Also, if you're traveling to a country, you can find flour, you can find milk, you can find eggs, but still, so you can hold onto your culture. Right. There was a strawberry shortcake and there was a strawberry festival that I wanted to go to. And then we didn't get to do that.
So we need more seasons. We definitely need more seasons. Yeah.
We need more seasons.
Yeah. I know what I love too about the stories in the shows were the people used what was available to them.
Yeah.
Yes. Just the barbecue one where they went to Virginia. Can you share a little bit about how, like, just going out and chopping, you know, the baster?
Like the wand. You're referring to the wand.
Yes.
Now, what I loved about that barbecue story, I live in Washington, D.C. I mean, Virginia is right there. It's in the name, the DMV. I have heard very little about Virginia barbecue. And when we think about not only our forefathers, but honestly, the making of barbecue, as we know it, happened right there in Virginia. So the trifecta are the Europeans because they did the whole hog, and our forefathers were having these political events, bringing people to the yard, you know. But then you had the enslaved who was... basically using all of their spices and tricks and all of that. And then you had the Native Americans who were digging the pit or the barbacoa and digging the pit. So it was a trifecta. So you need all three of those cultures to create what we now know as our American barbecue. But then it was all about that basting wand. And we went into the sticks, grabbing a stick and putting some cloth on it and, you know, making our thing. And people were just, you know, the ingenuity was amazing, but also tracing that and then being in, when we went to Accra in Ghana, that ingenuity that you see and you're like, okay, I mean, and as a Black woman, I was really excited just to see the ingenuity in like my homeland, my motherland of Africa, and seeing how as we as a people, you know, where there's a will, there is a way. I mean, for anyone, but I love seeing my culture and the contributions and, you know, because I think every culture, and that was the whole thing of the show, I want you to see a piece of your history and feel a sense of pride, you know, no matter who you are and what those contributions were.
And we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. And we're back.
How has the response been since the show came out?
It has been so great. Everyone says, yay, where can I see more seasons? You know, you know, it was funny because I did an interview and in D.C. and they wouldn't have said this on air, but they said, you know, we just wanted you to come because we really like you, Carla. But then we watched the show and it was really awesome, you know. I'm like, thanks. I'll take that. I will take that.
So whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes. It's just really nice to show people the different side of myself and to do a show where this travelogue. But if you think anybody who watched The Chew, so I was the one who did a lot of the field pieces. And so this show started really at the Two. And so this is a glorified version of the field pieces that I did, where I got to leave the studio and talk to people and, you know, like the girl on the street. And I love people. I think that is my superpower. The fact that I'm curious about people and that I really love people.
Right. I think, yeah, that definitely. Well, when you start out with your question to people, and like you said, people light up when they talk about their favorite food. And then, well, you were in Nashville, and Colleen and I are right near Nashville. And, you know, we talk about erasure, but that's still going on. Erasure is still going on. So can you share a little bit about the hot chicken? And I will never call it Nashville hot chicken again.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to do hot chicken because of my connection to Nashville. And I don't know if you remember, I had a restaurant for a very short period of time, Carla Hall Southern Kitchen there in Brooklyn. And I remember before it opened, it was maybe like 2015, and I was in Nashville, and I went to Prince's Hot Chicken, and I said to Simone and Ms. Jeffries, I said, oh, I'm opening up a hot chicken place, a Nashville hot chicken place in New York. And the reception was not as warm as I had hoped, but it was kind of like asking for their blessing. That in my head, that's what was happening. And when I didn't get that, I said, oh, they must just be busy. It wasn't until I'm shooting this show and I'm talking to them and I hear Miss Jeffries talk about how Prince's Hot Chicken became Nashville Hot Chicken, and that became just Hot Chicken, and how over the years, the decades that we know of, and because she changed it to Prince's Hot Chicken in the early 40s, the erasure of their name. And in that moment, I realized I was a part of that. And I was just looking at Simone, and I felt such shame. And I was like, oh my God. And later she said, she saw it in my face that I didn't get it until that moment. And so we have to think about that. In a lot of places, when you are thinking about only the dish, you don't know the history of it. And so you do, like, it's like making someone's name, like a nickname, like they're Matthew, and you call them Matt, and then it's M. And, you know, and so their name gets dwindled to the smallest, you know, letter. And so that's what we've kind of done over the years. And so that was really emotional. And the entire crew, I'm looking up at them, and my eyes are getting red, and they're crying. And, you know, and then she talks about how, you know, people do the dumpster dive and they can't even throw out their trash because people are trying to figure out what the recipe is. And it makes you think. And so whenever I refer to hot chicken, I'm like, Prince's, you know, like their legacy was pretty almost erased. And I'm very pleased that she's getting the attention that she should get. But you look at other brands, and no diss to Hattie B's, but they have more opportunities and money available to them to grow that brand over the one that started it.
And, you know, we have to talk about your big birthday coming up in May, because you have seen Carla everywhere talking about getting her sexy back. So where did that come from?
But, you know, it was interesting. So I decided, I've been thinking about this 60th birthday. I mean, I'm all about milestone birthdays. So my 40s, when I turn 40, when I turn 50, and 60 is a big one. And also the age at which, you know, people don't want to really talk about their age. And I decided to have a photo shoot of my birthday. And it was one of the stylist who made this shirt for me that said sexy. I'm like, oh my God. You know, so that it everything came about. And when I tell you that photo shoot was amazing, like the photographer was great, the hairstylist, you know, and the stylist, and then the designer of some of these outfits that I wore. So I am over waiting for somebody to do the thing that I want to do. If I want to do it, I produce it, I make it happen. And so my team, we talked about, I said, look, I want to do this photo shoot. And they're like, what are you going to do with the pictures? I said, I don't know. But I know that if we have these pictures, we can pitch them and to the paper that doesn't really have a budget, you know, that's not going to send somebody to me to have this photo shoot, but we'll already have them. And it's about doing that and doing the things that I absolutely want to do.
Yeah. And it just, it's just another part of just women our age, just, you know, showing, sharing the confidence that you can have. Mm-hmm. Yes. At this age.
When I tell you, so I'm working on a one woman show. That's another thing that I want to do because I was a child actor. I mean, so I did theater from 12 to 17 and I thought that was going to be my career. And this is me choosing something else that I want to do. So one of the and it's all these vignettes about my life. So one of the vignettes about menopause, I'm calling the vagina that sat by the door, taken from the book, The Spook Who Sat by the Door, because we are underestimated, right? And it's like we have all of this wisdom and we can honestly take over the world if we don't ask for permission. If we just get in there and do it.
We can take over. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And we're overwaiting for, like,
yes.
whose permission do we need?
Exactly. Who are we waiting for? And if I, whenever I hear young women say, I'm sorry, I said, don't be sorry. Mm-hmm. And if they say it 15 times throughout the conversation, I said, don't be sorry. I want you to hear my voice when you're somewhere and you say you're sorry, don't be sorry. Like, don't be sorry, you know?
Because that is true.
Yeah.
This time of life, we really need to get over that I'm sorry, that I don't deserve better. It's just, It's time.
It is time. And, you know, there's so much talk about, you know, care and the lack of knowledge when it as it surrounds menopause. And if we broke up with enough doctors because they don't know what they are doing, then we will change the trajectory of doctors actually going into a field that can help us. I mean, there are enough OBGYNs. You're going to have a baby, but what happens when those babies, the female babies, are transitioning to our age? And who is here to actually advocate for us and what is happening with our bodies? I think it's really important for those of us at this age, because we're going to change it for the next generation of young women and talk more about menopause and talk about it openly. I try to say menopause every chance I get. If I'm on TV and I can't remember something, I said, pause for the menopause.
That's awesome.
So true.
Awesome. Yeah, no, it's so true. You know, trying to get the word out is the biggest thing in this space. And, you know, just before Colleen and I started doing this podcast, I didn't realize that our OBGYNs only had at the most, 8 hours of study on menopause? 8 hours for how many years could this go on? 40, 50 years that you have of your life? You know, more of your life is probably going to be in menopause than your childbearing years.
Hopefully, yeah.
Hopefully. Let's hope.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yes, yes.
And that just no one, it's so connected with aging in a negative connotation. And I just think that, you know, who cares? Like, get
exactly. Exactly. I mean, honestly, who cares? I was with my acupuncturist and so she will ask me, well, how are things going? What do you want to work on today? And I always like balance and my brain fog. And so she said to me, well, why do you want to work on your brain fog? I'm like, why? What? Because I can't call banana when I see it. No.
Yep.
But she said something so interesting. She's like, you've had a lot of life. And so your brain can only hold so much of it. So why stress yourself out about remembering all the things? And you know, as soon as she said that, I just released this anxiety about not remembering the things. And even when I'm talking about it, if I can't remember, I'm like, oh, well, that's fine. I'll move on to the next thing. Because I was so stressed about it. Like I had to remember everything. And so even though I'm not pressuring myself to look a particular way, I want my brain to function in the same way. And it doesn't. And so I have to give myself grace and permission to be okay with those changes.
Vichy is a French skincare brand recommended by 50,000 dermatologists worldwide. They have over 30 years of expertise in menopause skincare, and their NeoVidiol line helps your skin look and feel radiant. Learn more at VichyUSA.com. Vichy is a proud sponsor of Hot Flashes and Cold Topics.
I know that you're very aware, you've done cognitive testing and that you have concerns about, how are you working to keep your cognitive health strong?
So, yeah, so I'm taking all of these, I do this cognitive test called WAVI. I've been getting the NAD drips, which is a complex B vitamins. It comes in drip form and it also comes in pill form. With the pill form, it's a very low dosage. I mean, you know, and you know, people feel differently about the IVs. It gives me energy and I find that it helps my mental acuity. And I also started doing it for my mom because my mother has mild dementia. My grandmother had Alzheimer's. And so I was talking to a doctor about that. And I said, according to my DNA, because it was one of those tests, it said, oh, I am, I carry the marker for early onset Alzheimer's. And I said, so what's early? And she said, late onset Alzheimer's. And she said, oh, it's 70 to 80. I'm like, that's not late.
That's not that long.
That's a decade from now.
I can see that right from here. And so a study was done that said if you do cardio at least 3 to 4 times a week, you can change that by 85%. So I can delay that to like 80 to 90. And when I think about, and that is a motivator to get out, to walk, to do whatever, because if that's going to give me my brain health, and at the end of the day, it's all about getting oxygen to the brain. So if your brain, if the blood vessels are shrinking, is to energize them with oxygen. And so I'm like, say no more. Okay. I got you.
So what are you looking forward to in your 60s?
I'm looking forward to having conversations like this. I'm looking forward to bringing awareness and just sitting around with a group of people and talking about their experiences very like openly. And also, I just want to inspire people, especially older women, to have new experiences, to do something that scares them. Because I truly believe that when you do that, it changes the mapping of your brain. It changes your outlook. It makes you look forward to the next thing. You have not just one more chapter, several chapters left. I mean, even at 60, I feel like I have several chapters left. And I want to be on this journey with other women who are like me. I choose to work with women who are older. I choose to work with, because I want to be the beneficiary of their wisdom. I really want to have enough energy to do the things that I want to do. And so even sometimes, and I feel it too, you know, I get the efforts and I just want to sit on the couch. That's fine. But also if I drag that out too long, then I get complacent. And that means I don't want to do something else. And then months go by, you don't want to do the thing. And then, you know what I mean? And I'm okay with sitting on the couch. I mean, I will have my downtime, but I want to vary it, you know, and I want to have new experiences, even if those new experiences are going to another country and meeting new people and all of that.
How important is sleep for you? Because we always talk about like what's important as we get older, and sleep is really top of my list. So how important is sleep for you?
You know, I didn't realize how important sleep was. I feel like it was about 8 years ago, somebody said, what are your top 10 favorite things? 8 of the 10 things had to deal with sleep. From my weighted blanket to my noise canceling Bose night earpieces to like a weighted mask to all of these different things, to listening to Audible, like all of these things.
To your fan. I know you have a portable fan.
A fan that is like that doesn't make a lot of noise, to my magnesium, my progesterone now is on that list. Like all of those things. I have always been a fan of sleep. Like even when I was in college, I'm like, ladies, it's 11 o'clock in the dorm. Shouldn't y'all be in bed? I mean, so I've always been one to count the hours of sleep that I get, like always. And so now it's just, you know, a grown up version. And so I don't wake up. You know, that was actually one of the telltale signs when I was hitting like menopause, and I was like, why am I waking up? I was always hot at night because my metabolic rate was so high. So I got hot around 2 a.m. But I was waking up, and I was like, I didn't know that that was one of the factors until I looked at a list, because I would never wake up in the middle of the night. So sleep is really important.
Also, when we were talking to Dan Buettner from the Blue Zones, how important community and connection and interaction, because there is a loneliness epidemic.
You know, we're at the age where we are younger, seeing the OBGYN and having kids, or we're older, we can't remember anything, and we're taking care of our parents, right? So my mother, I'm at the stage where with my sister, we're taking care of my mom. And so we had to move her from Nashville up to the Maryland, D.C. area to be with us, because she didn't remember that she wasn't doing all the things. She wasn't eating. She wasn't going to her exercising classes. She wasn't going to the club meetings. She wasn't doing those things that were keeping her basically energized and not depressed. And so when we moved her, it was just like this thing, when am I going back home? But we're like, Mama, but we can see you up here. And we had to tell some little tiny lies just to say, hey, the place is already furnished and we're going to move you in, and then you're going to go back home, knowing that we were furnishing that place for her. So that has been huge. And she is thriving mainly because she's around people. She is now eating as a social activity. She was wasting away. She was losing like 5 pounds a week. It was just crazy. And now it is completely changed, but she was depressed for that loneliness. And it absolutely, we saw a huge difference from before the pandemic and after the pandemic, and we couldn't visit her as often. And so it's been really great to sort of find her in a place where she has the activities and the exercise and eating.
Wow, that is such an important message too, because so many of our listeners are going through what you're going through with that sandwich generation, or just, you know, just trying to help out and trying to know what to do is so hard.
It has taken 2 months for her to settle in into a routine. And now she really enjoys being there. I mean, you know, and now I have all of these friends who are 106, 95.
Oh,
and I go, hey, Miss Doris, you know, hi, Melvin.
They love it. I'm sure they love it. And you had your mom on your Nashville episode. On the Prince's Hot Chicken
Prince
episode.
Hot, yes.
Yes, that was, yes, Prince's Hot Chicken episode, yes. Mm-hmm. And that was great to see. She was so cute. And
yeah.
I'm glad to hear that she's doing well and that you're busy and doing, what's next?
So I told you about the One Woman Show. I'm working on a new cookbook as we speak. It was going to be a while. I don't know why I'm mentioning it, because no one asked me about it. It's at the proposal stage, but I'm excited about it because I wanted to do a baking book years ago, and then I ended up doing soul food, I'm a tourist, by the way, so I can't do anything that I don't feel wholehearted that I have a buy-in. So if I'm waffling, it's never going to happen. I will procrastinate, but this is the right time. So I'm excited about working on that. And oh my gosh, you know what else I'm working on? I'm going to just put it out there. I want to do an HGTV show. So I may be in Nashville for quite some time, because I'm going to redo my childhood home. I'm pitching this.
That's great.
I'm pitching this show
that would be awesome.
Be in Nashville for a while.
Well, if you need assistance to come and hammer.
And even though we don't know how, we'll
bring the coffee, whatever you need.
Wouldn't that be amazing? I mean, I am telling you, I would absolutely have you all over. We could do hot flashes and whatever, you know, hot topics and hot flashes in a broken down house.
Because the air would be out. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, we'd have fans set up everywhere.
Yeah.
That is so great. That is great. I would love that. Because, yeah, I still am in love Fingers with my crossed. Childhood home. So I hope that all works out for you. I hope that Thank does. You. Yeah.
Well, we are just thrilled to have you on again. It's so much fun whenever we talk
it
to you.
Is.
Thank you so
it
much.
Oh my gosh. It's thank you all so much. Thanks for being a fan of Lori King and her products.
Oh yeah.
Oh, Care Beauty. I
mean, Care Beauty.
Yeah.
Dude, we didn't even get into talking about skin, but she's a huge fan.
Well, you introduced us to her and we
I know it's
friend and it's just like been great. And I've got my Care Beauty on.
Thank you so much. We could talk forever and we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you. Bye. Love you all so much.
Well, that was such a fun episode. We love talking to Carla Hall. She is just so much fun and so positive, and her outlook is fantastic. Just embracing her 60s, and I love it.
She's the epitome of someone who is aging well, living her best life, and not caring.
Prime woman goals. That's Carla Hall. Should be next to, you know, her picture in the dictionary if people still use dictionary.
And I also love that she likes to talk to women who are older than us.
Uh-huh.
Learn about their experiences, because everyone has a value. Everyone can share wisdom. So I loved that she mentioned that. If you enjoy this episode or are enjoying the podcast, we would really appreciate it if you jumped on and did a 5-star rating and a quick review. What that does is it makes the algorithms happy, which sends our podcast out to more people. So if you could do that, we would be ever so appreciative. And thank you in advance. Also, make sure you're following us on all of our social media. We have Instagram, we have TikTok, we have Facebook, we have Pinterest, we have YouTube. Make sure you're following our YouTube channel, because we have not just these episodes, but a whole host of other shorts and videos that we put up there. So guys, have an awesome week. Enjoy your International Women's Day coming up this Friday, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.